And welcome to Mining Stock Daily. This is Trevor Hall, host of the show. Sitting with me is Integra Resources CEO and President George Salamis with beautiful, actually sunny, Vancouver, British Columbia.
This pretty rare.
It is very rare.
And just a beautiful day to be here in the city during the Roundup Conference with AME. George, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
How are you today?
Yeah, great. Everything's great.
So let's just get to it. You've got a number of great news that came out in the last couple weeks. But before we kind of get to the technicals of the DeLamar project, I want to ask you, my first question for you is it easier or harder the second go around after coming off Integra Gold?
Yeah, harder.
Really?
Yeah, it is harder. And I'll tell you why. Coming out of Quebec, which is, you know, the premier mining jurisdiction where you've got access to capital, low cost of capital. You've got the funds that are positioned in Quebec to simply buy Quebec resource stories. Raising money is certainly far easier. That plus the sort of the flow-through regime that you have in Canada that you don't have in the U.S. means that for us chasing dollars is tougher. There's no other way to put it.
How about just exploration, permitting, and all that, going from Canada to the United States? Is that a whole different animal, whole different beast for that management to get that done? Or were the challenges similar but just kind of different based on the administrative duties of the process?
So the exploration process is generally speaking the same in both jurisdictions. Obviously, exploration in the Western U.S. is typically more expensive than Quebec. Mm-hmm. Drilling costs are certainly up there relative to Quebec. However, our engagement with the government, and that being the local government in Idaho, the state essentially, is on par with anything that we had in Quebec. For example, in Quebec we had an open dialogue with the province and permitting was never an issue. Mm-hmm. And thus far, our experience in Idaho has been very similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what about Idaho as a jurisdiction? Because it's interesting. That state's put themselves on the map in mining over the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. But in the last year, it's really gotten a lot of attention. What really drew you to Idaho in the first place and got eyes on the DeLamar project?
Well, first and foremost, we like those unloved jurisdictions. Val-d'Or was really one of them when Integra Gold first got into the Val-d'Or district sort of 7 years ago. We like the flavor of being in a district where there's a history of production that you can point to as a frame of reference. Val-d'Or was the same, produced a lot of gold. Idaho, lots of gold and silver has been produced there. So you know you're not starting from scratch on something.
Right.
And then in these districts, in these more mature districts, you know that if it's gone through a few cycles, there are probably elements of the geology that might not be understood or overlooked, or there's a certain mindset that gets built in where somebody comes along and says, oh, look, everything that is worth finding has already been explored, therefore we're just going to walk away. We like those environments, and Idaho was certainly that.
Yeah, very good. So let's get into the project. Kind of give me the brief overview, 30,000-foot view of DeLamar, what you brought into the project and where we're at today.
Okay. So the DeLamar District, southwestern Idaho, past producing mining district, it produced, roughly speaking, about 1.5 million ounces of gold and about 100 million ounces of silver. And there are really two eras of production. And so the first era was sort of the 1880s to early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And that was the era of bonanza grade, really high grade underground mining of gold and silver. And you're talking, 15 gram per ton cutoffs, 30, 60, 90 gram per ton average grades in these in these narrow vein high grade structures. And then from the early 1900s to the mid 1970s, nothing was going on. The district basically was dormant. Mm-hmm. And then you're getting into an era, sort of early to mid 70s, where low grade disseminated bulk tonnage deposits were coming into vogue. And everybody was looking for them. They liked the sort of the scale that open pit mining provided. And so that was the era of Kinross at DeLamar, sort of mid 70s to late 1990s. And they produced a fair bit of gold and silver doing that, and economically. One of the things that was really important for us when we were doing the due diligence on this asset, because you always wonder, you know, what am I buying here? What might they be trying to pass off on to us? And so that, you know, you've got your checklist, which is reclamation. Am I inheriting a huge environmental liability in doing this? And the answer was very quickly no. The bonding arrangement was reduced from $20 million to $2 million. And the state had effectively signed off on all the reclamation that needed to be done on the site. So that was great. The second and equally important for us was, why are they parting with this for, you know, $7.5 million of cash, essentially? You know, is there some impairment to the resource base? And so one of the first things that we did was we did an internal resource estimate, both on Florida and Delamar, the two deposits. And we very quickly concluded that there's a very large remnant resource base there that was not shut down in the late 1990s because of an exhausted resource or reserve base. It was shut down purely for price considerations. This was kind of nuclear winter in the gold and silver space. Gold was trending towards like 250, 270 an ounce. Nobody was making money.
Kinross was trying to cover their bottom line.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we like that aspect. So already we're starting from an enlarged base. We've got a lot to work with,
right,
which is not something we really had in Val-d'Or. We had to build up the resource base over time, which we did, whereas in Delamar, we're starting with something huge.
Yeah. So I think it was last week you put out a news release about the acquisition of the War Eagle deposit. Mm-hmm. What do you see at War Eagle that made some of that something the company really wanted to see through?
Yeah, so I think it just War Eagle is just a testament to the fact that we're not just dealing with a one-off gold-silver deposit in the district. There are lots of deposits in the district, and it truly is a district. You know, people tend to think of Delamar as just being one deposit, but it's not. It's a series of deposits that all have a genetic relationship. They're all low sulfidation epithermal deposits. They're all about the same age, mid-Miocene age deposits, roughly speaking, 16 million years old. And they all have this common flavor. The only difference between Delamar and Florida and War Eagle is War Eagle never had that low-grade disseminated gold-silver component to it. It was always deemed as a, you know, very high-grade past producer underground.
Mm-hmm.
And we're inheriting this deposit with, you know, 20 to 30 odd drill holes that have already been done. We could put together a resource on this project probably with what's there. And there are some very high grade historical intercepts.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to make, you know, what's there bigger. And that's our mission. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about some recent drill intercepts that you reported. I remember reading this and I looked at it and I kind of paused. And to me, in my mind as an investor, it made me think, those numbers solidify a pretty good chance that there's a future mine there, at least, you know, from what I read. But you did announce that drill holes are intercepting 2.53 grams per ton gold equivalent over 109 meters. You've been in this business long enough. When you see something like that, do you still get excited?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So when you get that, I mean, you saw similar numbers in Canada and Quebec. So how do you kind of manage those expectations, knowing, like, I've seen this before and I know it can possibly happen?
I think the big sort of game-changing aspect to hole 59, the big step out that we put out, was really how far away we'd actually stepped away from what we had drilled previously, which we were already getting success, having a lot of success in Sullivan Gulch. And we were seeing a deposit coming, sort of taking shape outside of the resource boundary that is Delamar. But to make that big a leap and see that geological connection and that width and grade of mineralization, and we're talking grades that are, you know, at 2.5 grams, we're talking grades that are three times the resource grade that we published. You know, that got us really excited. Probably the best post-Christmas present I've had in years.
No, that's great.
Because
it seems like the market rewards discoveries right now, right? Like the market really wants to see big numbers. But and I've seen instances where it's smaller intercepts with, you know, crazy gold grades, and the market's like, you know, they keep pumping money into those stocks. Mm-hmm. But it's something like this, I mean, it is big gold grades and longer intercepts, and it, you know, it can be solidifying to know that there's a mine project there in the future. And you did see a little bit of an upward tick in your stock price at the time. But it just didn't seem like it was as rewarding as some of those other, you know, drill holes from, we've seen from other companies. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you as a CEO of this company about where we are in the market?
It tells me that the market is still risk averse. It's still looking at, you know, what could go wrong. And there have been so many burning hulks of junior mining companies that have hit a wall for reasons related to risk, and whether that's jurisdictional risk, technical risk, financing risk. And so there's still this trepidation in the market that, hey, you know, they've got a large resource base and it's going to grow. You know, what could this look like as a fully developed mine in the future? And I think, you know, there are probably a few more boxes that we need to tick, which we'll be ticking over the course of the year. And I've got no reservations to tell you today. I believe that the next resource estimate is going to be phenomenal. The PA numbers are going to be very compelling. But we're very much in that show me part of the market. And we have to show, you know, the investing community that's the case.
Do you think the market has kind of shelved blue sky potential in this sector?
I think it's probably the opposite. I think the market's really rewarding those one-off, you know, one-hole sort of intercept discoveries. And we've seen evidence of that, right? Yeah. More so than say, dealing in a mature district where you're working along the fringes of a known deposit.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you did, you mentioned it before, and I just wanted to kind of bring it up. It seems like this does have the potential to be a huge project. Mm-hmm. We know it's a bit early, but have you started putting together your expectations for a PEA?
We have. You know, one of the things that we did a lot of at Integra Gold was kind of our hallmark, was just doing a lot of our own internal homework before handing a lot of data over to the independent engineering firms who do these studies for us. And, you know, we've seen too many times examples in the market of companies just saying, okay, here's the data, call us in 6 months and tell us what the NPV and IRR are of the right. deposit, only to be, you know, get this massive shock. And by the time you get that massive shock, it's too late. You have to go live with that. There's no turning back from that. And it's hard to repair. So we've done a lot of internal modeling, and we've got the bandwidth and the capability to do that. So we've done a internal resource estimate based on what we know to be there. We've done some rudimentary mine optimization of that resource to look like, okay, what would this look like if it was properly sequenced as an open pit? Then we've done some rudimentary modeling of, you know, processing development and processing options. You know, we know that some elements of the 3.5 million ounces of gold equivalent that are out there will very definitely be leachable, and some will be millable. And so we've had to make a bit of a guess as to what that proportion is. But based on what we see there, you know, getting to the 200,000 ounce a year plus gold equivalent mark is you know, within range of this PA.
What are your thoughts on, you know, kind of overall, not just this specific project and the PEA that will come with it, but just kind of PEAs in general? Because I know a lot of people, they, you know, companies have to do it, but investors should take it for a grain of salt, because once the feasibility study comes up, you're rarely even close to those numbers that came out of PEA. So knowing that, and also having experience in this industry, like, what is your approach for those PEAs? Do you approach yourself fairly conservative, or putting out those numbers and try to be as, you know, as accurate as you can, knowing that those numbers probably will change once a feasibility study comes out? Or, you know, how do you manage that balance as well?
Yeah, again, not to belabor the Integra Gold experience, but the exercise at Integra Gold is no different from what we're about to embark upon, where we've got a mature district where there's a long mining history, where you know, a lot is known. So you're not starting from scratch and first principles on things like geotechnical criteria of mining that ore in an open pit or metallurgy. Because, you know, in the case of Sigma-Lamaque, there was 75 years of processing and mining history. So those costs are, generally speaking, well known,
yeah.
right, because yeah. of that history. Delmar is the same. It's a mine that shut down in the late 1990s. A lot is known about the deposit. So just to answer the question about, you know, is this a PEA that one has to, you know, pinch one's nose and, yeah. and hold their breath? PEAs are always going to be a little bit about that. But we feel that, you know, a lot of the inputs, that assumptions that we're going to be making in the PEA are based on a mining history. And that serves to lower the risk of a PEA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Based on what you're hearing within the market, and what are majors looking for? I know this might be a little, you know, putting the cart before the horse a little bit because of the early stage you're at with the project. But you've been through a couple cycles. What do you think majors are looking for right now?
Scales for sure, right? So, and I think that this whole scale question is really going to increase because of these mega mergers. So you've got companies no longer needing 3.5 million ounces per annum to replace their own production profiles. But in mm-hmm. the case of, you know, Goldcorp and Newmont, for example, that's what 7.5 million ounces a year of annual production that they'll be chewing through their own reserve bases and needing to replace. So scale is going to be important going
yeah.
forward. So the, you know, the era of the 50 to 100,000 ounce a year producer, that's not bad. It's a great starting point, but I think the majors really need to see far more scale than that.
Okay. It's pretty interesting that you mentioned it because it makes me think of, you know, 3 months ago before the Barrick-Randgold merger, we all heard that the majors are reducing their resource supply. They're going to have to find a way to scale up some more. But I just don't know if two major companies merging together who are both seeing depleted assets, then merging solves the problem.
Right.
So I guess, you know what's your thoughts on that? Are they still going to be kind of in a hole in trying to figure out what to do even after these mergers? Is it...
Well, I think there's a period of elation, right? It's
right.
It's like the love affair at the beginning of a dating profile or a marriage, right? Everybody's
right.
happy because they've got this big reserve base, and the romance is there, and then sort of reality sets in. Holy heck, we've got to replace 7.5 million ounces a year of production. Obviously, all of these mega merger transactions have occurred because they couldn't find a means of growing their production profiles internally, so they had to go externally mm-hmm. to basically backfill what their production profiles. Once the reality of that sets in, I think we're going to be back to an era where they'll be looking outward for new opportunities. And,
yeah.
and it's our job as the junior mining company to fill that pipeline.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they do such a poor job.
You want to try to kind of wrap this up a little bit, but I did want to follow up. It is two different questions.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know today, what does success look like with the Delmar project and this company? And then I also want to know what the biggest challenges you're going to be faced with in the new year.
So, and this is a very timely question because we just had this sort of what does success look like at the board level type discussion. And so, you know, simply put for us, this year is going to look like success in a resource estimate that will show material growth.
Mm-hmm.
In a resource estimate where we hope we will have converted a fair bit of the inferred resource to a measured and indicated category. So that covers off on resource success. And then the PEA success to me looks like a demonstrable production profile that hits or exceeds the 200,000 ounce a year gold equivalent production mark over an extended period of time. Something in this sort of order of 8 to 10 years would be phenomenal.
Well, that's ideal for any project, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think getting back to one of the questions, what are the majors looking for? They're also looking for longevity,
mm-hmm.
right? Assets, you know, 6 to 8 years are great, but something with a longer mine life where they can see, projected production profiles well beyond 10 years is something that's an attraction.
Okay.
With the large resource base that we have at this project, we can certainly demonstrate that. And then with the PEA in hand by mid-year, and subject to positive economics, which we think will be very positive, we can then start permitting, or the first iterations of permitting, because we know what development options we're looking at, where the infrastructure needs to go, and what areas of the concession we need to start looking at permitting on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Challenges as a CEO, as a Canadian company working in the U.S., do you have any concern over the kind of political back and forth that's happening in the States right now?
I mean, we haven't had any evidence of how should I say, hardship on that end. Mm-hmm. We've been dealing with the state officials because we're on patented ground with these sort of granted rights that go back to the late 1800s. We're not dealing for the most extent, we're not dealing on BLM ground.
Right.
Our discussions with the state have been great when it comes to, look, this is what we're thinking, is this doable under this circumstance or some other circumstance? And it's been very positive and proactive with the state so far. So, the regulatory environment in the state seems to be very amenable to mining in the future. My biggest concern now and will remain, how do we finance this?
Right.
Okay.
It's always about the money, the bottom line,
always,
right?
I mean, we've seen better times, better markets. We're raising $20-40 million is relatively straightforward and simple. We're not in that part of the cycle yet.
Is it going to take just a higher gold price to get more public capital into this sector, or is it more than just that?
It's more than that, just that, but that's certainly going to help. We need to start seeing the generalist funds coming back in to invest in the resource sector. The good news is that these mega mergers, because they're going to start through accretion, they're going to start creating these very large market cap companies, that's going to attract a new breed of investor, the generalist fund that can only invest in companies of a certain size. And up to now, the mining business has been too small to attract the really big generalists. So I think we're going to see more interest from that. Those funds typically, those investment funds from the generalists typically find their way down to us eventually.
Right.
They'll invest in the mega gold producer. The mega gold producer will build bigger projects. They'll feel better about their balance sheets, and then that money typically trickles its way down.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I know I said I had one last question 3 questions ago, but
I
do have one last question, because we were talking before this interview about a mutual colleague that you brought on board. That's Tim Arnold, and he's the vice president of project development with the company now. But it's interesting, Tim is actually from that area where Delamar is. So
yes, indeed.
Obviously, there's an enormous amount of value and benefit from that. But from your experience, how important is having a localized, experienced person on your project for you?
Oh, huge, right? I mean, it's a matter of pride for him. And that was one of the first things that he mentioned when we first started having a discussion was, this is really me going back to my roots, and so it was a sense of pride for him.
Yeah.
He understood the scale of the project that we're looking at potentially as a sort of near-term development scenario, and he liked that aspect a lot, and that really is his sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
That sort of development stage, the permitting stage, transitioning from development into operations, full-scale production. That's what he does best.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. When I saw that news, it really put a smile on my face, because, obviously as a supporter of Integra, I own shares, and really happy with the collaboration, with the sponsorship Integra gives this show. But when I saw Tim come on board, me knowing him personally, it just put a real good smile
that's
on my
great.
Face. So
that's
I congratulate
Thank
both
you.
Tim and you.
Thanks.
So.
That was a great addition.
Yeah.
And I should say also very sorely needed, because, geologists, and I'm one, so I can disparage geologists all day long. There's only so far we can delve into the world of mining engineering and metallurgy.
Right.
And then we pass that point soon where it becomes dangerous for geologists to be touching engineering and metallurgy. So it's really good to have somebody whose background is in engineering, essentially, to be handling those aspects for us. And it's going to become more and more as we go forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think just bringing home the technicalities of the project as it continues to move forward, I think it's kind of like, you know, let's bring, you know, put it at bay, and here's the actual technical numbers that we need to consider as we continue to move this. And I think it's funny because I've worked with a number of different companies, both Canadian and American, mm-hmm. right? And there almost seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe you could, you know, please feel free to tell me if I'm wrong, but it almost seems like American companies are technicalities first, and then kind of like the, you know, we got a project first, which I kind of see on the Canadian side. So is there like a cultural, do you think there's like a cultural way of doing business there between Canadian and American companies?
Yeah, there might be.
The Canadian, so I'm not wrong, no, but I may not right.
No, you're right. And I think I'd have to probably point to Canadian companies tend to be more focused on sort of the market nuances of what makes a project, mm-hmm. whereas U.S. companies tend to be more focused on brass tacks, you know, technical economics and merits of mining and exploration.
Yeah. Yeah. George, before I do let you go, I am done now, but is there anything you wanted to conclude with?
I think the only thing I'd kind of like to throw out there is that we, you know, in terms of news going on right now, there's no better time for us in terms of excitement than what's coming up over the next couple months. So we're drilling Sullivan Gulch now. So we're essentially drilling in between that big step out and where the other, you know, monster intercepts were further north in the gulch. And, you know, we've got indications of those two points connecting up. I'm going to guess that the drilling is going to look pretty good mm-hmm. here over, coming out over the next couple of months, obviously subject to what comes out of the assays. Right. But I think this is going to be, over the next few months, a period of lots of excitement.
So by the time you and I catch up over PDAC, do you think there'll be more results out?
Yep.
Okay, well, I look forward to having that conversation.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And seeing what has happened since then.
Sounds great.
That is George Llamas, CEO of Integra Resources. Integra Resources is traded on the TSX Venture with the symbol ITR and also in the US OTC markets with the symbol IRRZF. George, thank you for joining us.
Trevor, thank you.
Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein.